Roger's actually leading it. And before I hand over to him, I'm sure you've all read about him and the amazing fact that he trained doctors who were working barefoot in the Amazon jungles of Peru back in the 70s, I think, 80s? Well, he set him up well to work hard in Leicester, where he started to work with the homeless and provided the first centre which cared for dogs as well as people, which was a major breakthrough. And fast forward into the 90s and then, of course, into 2005 when he was setting up the Pathway Charities at University College London and was awarded the OBE and thoroughly deserved. And of course, Nigel is, for me and for all of you in the room, an inspiration, a legend, and somebody we all look up to and try to emulate. So I'm just going to hand you over.
No pressure.
But he is amazing, you have to admit it. And it's because of him that we're all here today. And there's 280 delegates in this building. And it is absolutely amazing. I've learned so much. And I'm going to hear more today. So I'm actually probably going to just keep quiet now and hand over to Nigel. We are going to use the microphone. So we'll hand it round and hear about Pathway Projects and supporting each other.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much for that extraordinarily embarrassing introduction. So actually the plan is I'm not going to talk at you. What we really wanted to do was take the opportunity of getting representatives from the various Pathway teams around the country together so that we can just bring each other up to speed about where we've got to. This would also be of interest to people from other areas who are thinking about setting up Pathway teams or people involved in hospital discharge arrangements. And the sort of narrative behind this, as I'm sure you know, we set up with Aidan's support the first Pathway team at UCLH in 2009. We described it, we published some good outcomes data, and it just seemed like an idea whose time has come. And now there are teams in Bradford, Leeds, Manchester, various of the London hospitals and Brighton, and we hope teams are going to be coming soon in Edinburgh and in Dublin. And a couple of weeks ago, I was in Perth, Australia, and you'll hear more about this later, to launch the first Perth Pathway service. It seemed bizarre that they needed to fly somebody from England out to Australia to tell them that this could be done. But that is something weird about bringing about change in the NHS. It sometimes seems that, or change in any healthcare system, sometimes it helps have somebody from outside to come and say, you can do this magic and sprinkle some fairy dust on it. So we seem to have come up with a way of working, which I think with all the thinking we've done about this comes down to individual care coordination supported by a multidisciplinary team. That's basically the essence of what we do. And when you look at any successful intervention which is dealing with complexity, in the field of frail elderly or diabetes care or learning disabilities, or any area which you've got complexity, and particularly where you've got a mixture of physical ill health with mental ill health and sepsis, misuse disorders, which is what we're primarily talking about, that fairly simple idea of individual care coordination supported by a multi-agency team seems to be what it's all about. So basically, my plan for this session is for it to be as interactive as possible. The room slightly going to take against that, but I think we're just going to have to be ready to kind of shout and question and talk to each other. And what I want to do is pass the microphone round. So the reason we're using the microphone is that we're recording this session, and although you're not on film, your voice will be recorded, so people can hear this back afterwards and look back at the learning. So what I wanted to do, and each of the teams have been conning a bit, I hope, so that we should have here representatives from most of those Pathway teams around the country. And the idea is that each team will just give us a brief update on where they're up to, how they started, where they're up to, what their team consists of, roughly, in terms of numbers, and then talk about what's going well, things that they're proud of, and I guess what I've got in my mind here is things that other of us could learn. Oh, that's going really well in Leeds, let's see if we can steal that idea. What could be better, challenges, so if we can't get this right, we keep asking us for outcome measures and we don't see people for long enough. And so again, see whether we've got ideas from other places that could solve some of our shared problems. And then looking at the sort of funding situation and sustainability, everybody's gradually moving from short-term funding money towards more But again, if we could just learn from each other where the money's coming from, what's the difference in ongoing commissioning. And then have a bit of a discussion at the end about what you collectively would like Halfway the charity to be doing to continue to support you. We're thinking about how we move from being at the sort of stage where basically we've been shouting about these problems and trying to get solutions, and Pathway Teams is a small part of that. Where do we go from here? How would you like us to support you? And what should Pathway the Charity be doing in the future? So, all of that, and we're going to do that in the next 50 minutes. It'll be easy, easy peasy. So perhaps I'm just going to broadly go in this time, and Peter's down there, kind of familiar face. So maybe you'd introduce yourself and tell us about your team.
Hi, I'm Peter Buckland. I'm the clinical lead for the Pathway Homeless Team at the Royal London Hospital. We've been going since 2011. We started with funding as part of a clinical trial along with Brighton, looking at the Pathway model, and it was a randomised control trial. So that funded our first year and a half, 2 years. After that, we had a string of very short-term money and stressful times of really only getting about 6 months at a time. But happily, after a lot of battling, which Nigel and Pathway helped a lot with, we have got CCC ongoing funding now as of the last year or so. And that's not time limited. We were kind of, would have been grateful for a sort of 2 or 3 year thing, but they've actually, well, as whatever ongoing means in this climate, but it is kind of permanent funding, as permanent as anything can be, which is great. So in that way, we've got a lot more stability for the first time now, because it's obviously very hard to plan for the future when you've only got kind of a few months funding secured and you don't really know. You know, we had lots of ideas of things we wanted to do, but expanding in any way when you don't know whether you'll be there or how many team members you'll be able to fund is really difficult. So, I mean, the things we're proud of, I think, are, I think we've now got a really good team consisting of two nurses, myself, two nurses. We've got our first care navigator, Gavin, in front of me, who came across from UCH, how long ago now?
A year ago now.
Which I have to say has been amazing, and I think definitely one of the pluses. And I think in terms of what Pathway can do, I think that I would say is definitely one of the things Pathway can do, because I think we're in an environment where you talk a lot about service user involvement and that sort of thing, and I think a lot of it's incredibly tokenistic. And certainly in all my time in homelessness and substance misuse, it's the first time I've actually seen it being something real and being a really valuable contribution to a team, and obviously a win-win, I think, in both directions for the care navigators, and I think for the teams, certainly. And I think one thing, you know, that I found really interesting when Gavin started with us was the different perspective it brought, and particularly with patients. You know, we'd be sort of doctors and nurses would be flapping around thinking one thing, and then Gavin would come back and go, "No, oh, they've got somewhere to go." And it would have had a totally different conversation with the person than I think we were able to have for probably a whole lot of reasons. But I think, I think for a lot of reasons, I think it feels like such a valuable thing for the team. So I think that would be probably the biggest thing I think that Pathway could do, because obviously I think one of the reasons it's been successful is because obviously a lot of hard work has gone into supporting and training the care navigators, and I think that pays off. So I think that's certainly something. I think the other thing we're really proud of is we've got a really built up, I think, within the hospital, a really good weekly MDT that really does feel very multidisciplinary. We have someone from housing most weeks from our Tower Hamlets housing where we're located. We have some hospital staff, like drug and alcohol nurses, always, pretty much always come. We've got amazing buy-in from the voluntary sector, so very senior representations from the hostels come on a every week basis, and I think in 5 years I've missed one MDT. As well as several others of our local rough sleeper outreach team, our local floating support team, and I mean there will be a session this afternoon, but I think the other thing that we're really proud of that's come out of the collaboration, particularly with housing, has been that our housing department facilitated setting up a team called Roots to Roots that's actually supporting people not from Tower Hamlets to reconnect to where they're from. And it's really probably one of the only examples of that I know of, that an area funds a team to actually work with people that are not from that borough. Which I think is pretty forward thinking, but again, I think quite a win really, because usually it's very difficult to support those people for lots of reasons, but often difficulty getting someone from the borough till they're back to that borough, and the people in the borough that we're in don't want to work with them because they're not Tower Hamlets people. And particularly at a big hospital like the Royal London, it's a major trauma centre, so we have, when we did the clinical trial, it was about 50% of the patients were not from Tower Hamlets. So many of them other parts of London or the country, and some of them from other countries, obviously. So there is a session this afternoon around that now. Head of housing, who's sort of very instrumental in setting that up, is doing a session. So I won't sort of go on too much about that. I think challenges you want to go through, and I'm aware lots of things to talk, so there's a long list of challenges, and they'll probably be, I suspect, sound familiar to most of the other teams. I guess the things that sprung to mind when I tried to think about this were frustrating things in the system that seem relatively like they could potentially easily be solved, but somehow seem monumentally difficult in a hospital setting. And some examples of that are like medications not being ready despite us being nagged for a week about when can this person go, when can this person go. We do a complex sort of discharge with people outreach workers coming in to pick the person up, and you know, in time for a 10 o'clock housing appointment, and you know, no medications are ready, and it just, that's one recurrent hospital theme that seems impossible to solve for reasons I don't understand. Methadone on people being discharged. We did a lot of work in the Royal London setting up a policy for opiate addiction, which didn't exist when we started. It's a really good, brief, practical policy that nobody looks at and is impossible to find on the internet, on the hospital intranet. Again, you know, how hard would it be? But it has been an absolutely impossible task to get it easily searchable on the hospital intranet. So none of the junior doctors know where to find it. The drug and alcohol nurses give the same talk as do we to anyone who'll listen, and every discharge, make sure they've had their methadone on the day they're going and put it on the discharge summary, and all those conversations that we just seem to have.
There's a lot of nodding here. Everybody else had methadone, TTOs, delays. Hands up if you had delays. Yeah. 100, yeah. Brilliant. Okay.
And that's frustration. We've got a really good policy, and it's not long. It's, you know, 3 or 4 pages long, really straightforward, really spells out to, you know, nursing staff and an experienced junior doctor what to do. People don't know it's there. If they do know it's there, they don't follow it. So that's definitely one of the big frustrations. A few other hospital things, therapists not really understanding the needs of this population, so saying that there are no support needs when clearly there are support needs. And one stupid example would be, you know, well, they can order online shopping with their credit card. Well, I don't know how many of your patients have credit cards, but not many of ours do. So, you know, again, just having these discussions over and over with therapy staff, and saying they can do stairs, and going, yes, but the housing department could put them 5 floors up with no lift. So if you put on the report they can do stairs without qualifying it further, then, you know, we're going to have a lot of practical problems, and certainly if there are any outreach people taking them to where they got to go, they're going to have a big challenge.
Peter, so, I'm so sorry, we've got more speakers. Have you got, just run through your last
Yes, I suppose, okay, so other areas which I want to go into, but IT stuff, EMIS, which a lot of work's going on at the moment, has been an absolute headache. For our team, we work for one trust, but it's not the Barts Health Trust, it's the trust of the hospital, so a whole host of problems are being from one trust but not working for the trust of the hospital, so lots of practical problems with that. Social services relationships can be challenging.
That's great. Yeah. You can do the whole talk next year. Fantastic. Thank you so much.
It'll be interesting to see how many of those themes start to emerge.
Yeah.
So thanks, Peter. That's got off to a great start. And I think it's interesting to have to visualise it from outside. We're talking East London, healthy one, specialist homeless primary health care, managed by a community trust, funded by the CCG, and in reaching the Royal London to do their care coordination, and things emerge in different ways. I think to keep really on their toes and kind of randomly leap about in a real stairway. And I thought it would be interesting to have a contrasting view from Manchester. Have you got the empath people around? Because I think the similar big city stuff.
Brian Mountain, I was feeling very comfortable there. I'm Jerry O'Shea, one of the GPs in Manchester Service. I've been in practice since the early 90s and homeless work probably throughout that time. We became a PMS in 99 and that really led to some development services in the practice, which was an advocacy service in developing a large cohort of homeless patients. And our empath teams are developing that working with the pathway and with the support analogy. And we managed to negotiate with Metropolitan Film, which is the largest teaching hospital in the city. To have a pathway project into them. So we have a really an integrated service, which has been one of the real positive aspects of our service. So we're able to register people. We know many of the people who are in hospital now who are our patients. So one of the big strengths, I think, has been that seamless integration between primary and secondary care. So issues around methadone, which you're alluding to, it's easy for us to even say, give them today's methadone, come and see us tomorrow, because we've got a very large substance abuse service in practice. So similarly with medication, because we have the same challenges, the TTOs aren't ready on the day of the race, even though we've got about 3 months to arrange it. So sometimes we can help out by just getting them out of hospital and then we'll do the medication ourselves. So in some ways, I think that's given us confidence really to take on some more difficult people because what's happened to them in the hospital. Our team now consists of, we think of the whole homeless team, and we're a large practice now, we're over 10,000 patients. We have 700 homeless patients as well. The whole homeless team consists of myself and Sean Jackson, who are the lead GPs, but Emma and all the GPs really involved in homeless care. We have a manager of the homeless service. We have three case managers, and Rachel's got more of a specialist housing experience, and that's brought really a lot to the team because that was really difficult to find in the hospital. We have some admin support. One of the benefits I found in the hospital is, as a GP going back in after many years out of secondary care, has been really challenging, but it's really added a kind of diversity to my job description, which I found a positive thing. I found it become embedded in the hospital now, so people talk about arrows to empath, which is not always a great thing because we can get handed off. I guess that's going to happen. So that's been real positive. We develop relationships with consultants. Again, not always an easy ride, but I think it's raised the profile of homelessness. It's changed
So is that a Devo Mank phenomenon, the financial uncertainty, or?
I think it's a combination of factors. I think we found it quite difficult to identify who's actually controlling the funding.
Right.
We were funded by Better Care. That's Devo Mank is, you know, potentially an opportunity for us. So we do work on Christmas Council.
Does anybody have any questions for the MPAC or Manchester service? Just to clarify what they're saying. So this is a city centre practice combining inner city practice with some specialist homeless chunk on the site. So mix inner city and specialist homeless practice doing this for the hospital. I always feel as though you kind of almost spontaneously arose, didn't you, in Manchester? There was a particular hospital in the papers about Pathway and a bit of year-end money, and that's what kicked it off. Is there anything more that we could be doing centrally, you know, and what we Pathway the charity could be doing to support you? I guess one of the things we're thinking about is whether there's any kind of shared outcome measures that we could be gathering which might be of support. So we could say, rather than having to individually prove, you know, every 6 months that you're doing a good thing, whether we could collectively say, you know, nationally there is this data, this approach produces this sort of cost benefit, get off our back, something that could be.
I think potentially we demonstrated good outcomes and we achieved additional, you know, ongoing funding because of purely economic level. There was evidence of savings to be made. We tried to actually promote the quality agenda and say that this is a good thing to do, it's the right thing to do, you know, and actually you can't always show that it saves money.
Yeah.
I think standards have been really useful for the Pathway and it's helped to galvanise and looking at our own standards. So I think what you're saying would be potentially helpful. It's sometimes when you feel it's not down to just being in business cases, it's the political and the lobbying aspects. I think that's the other side.
It's probably more the raising the voice and this sort of national type event.
And I hope that will bring us through. I think the idea within the hospital and probably in CCGs and otherwise that this is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And it's not to me, it's just
Can I just ask one question? Has anybody in the room got guaranteed funding beyond what, 3 years?
We've got recurring.
Forever.
In an email.
Hey.
Excellent. And London forever.
Well.
Recurrent rather than forever.
So that's
forever.
Two pathways teams.
Yeah, we're two out of ten.
That's brilliant.
Excellent, because
we can follow behind, can't we, which
is
fantastic.
Yeah, points to where it's going well. Okay, where's Brighton? Are you from Brighton? Yeah, let's go right down to the far south.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
My name's Simon Tanner. I'm the advocacy lead for Pathway Plus. I think we're quite unique down in Brighton because we're a joint venture between Pathway, a company, a charity called Just Live, Brighton Homeless Healthcare, specialist GP surgery, and St John Ambulance. Pathway Plus was set up after, like Peter, the Pathway clinical trials in October 2013. The team is made up of Dr. Chris Sargent, who works 2 days a week, normally a Wednesday and one day at the weekend. Myself, outreach and advocacy lead, we've just employed a care navigator last month who left the local authority, was made redundant. And we're about to employ a nurse, I believe, on the 1st of April. And we had a band 7 nurse from A&E who left us, unfortunately, in September, as accommodated. So we've been nurseless and a bit short on the ground for the past 6 months. Now we see, I don't know if all Pathways see, we see everybody that comes in that's homeless from the emergency department onwards. So that's homeless, street homeless, hostels, emergency accommodation, temporary accommodation, travellers, and safer centres. So we see them all. What we do is we work with them, as I said, the minute they come into the emergency department, then once they're warded, then we take them out, our team take them out, advocate the local authority, so we can get them housed. Once they're housed, we pass them on to outreach workers who work for Just Life. We've got 2 designated outreach workers who work with people in emergency and temporary accommodation. So we have use of an ambulance and an ambulance driver 5 days a week, which is very useful, moving people around safely, and being able to park everywhere, we find is a great things we're quite proud of. We've got ourselves now a designated, under Brighton Hove City Council, a designated homeless persons officer who we liaise with, which has proved a bonus. There is talk at the moment of that person being based part-time up at the Royal Sussex County Hospital. Fingers crossed that happens. We also have a weekly MDT, which is attended by the drug and alcohol people locally now. That's commissioned by Pavilions, hostel managers again, the police, St Mungo's, who are now our Rough Sleepers Outreach team, and the council. Challenges, referrals. We find that the Royal Sussex County Hospital, especially within A&E at the moment, there's quite a high turnover of staff, so people forget about us. So we have to be proactively every morning, 8 o'clock, we start the ward round to see if anybody's turned up. Again, TTOs. The bane of, I think, all of our lives, don't you, Peter? TTOs, we have a system now, TTOs aren't ready, we're not coming to get them. That's the way it goes. We face the problem as well with the scripts, the methadone. We carry around the protocol hard copy with us now, just to plonk in front. By the sound of it, yours is 3 pages long, ours is 1, so it's a little bit
easy.
It's a short protocol. It's a much shorter protocol. And we have been educating our hospital rapid discharge team, because they didn't really get what we did. That slowed down a lot of discharges. I don't know if anyone else has come across that. That's pretty much it.
It's interesting the rapid discharge thing slowed you down.
Quite ironic. Thanks very much, Simon.
There's a question, Nigel.
Yeah,
just one question. When you talked about how they were rehoused and then they moved on to kind of a support network, it sounded like that was a very easy process, very cathartic. That's the longest bit, really.
I wouldn't say it's easy. I think we're very successful in what we do. We triage people when they're in the hospital. I look, are they going to meet the 5, I'm not going to make the housing legislation, but will they be housed by a local authority? Do the housing authority have a duty to house them?
Yeah, so priorities.
Priority needs, and various other bits and pieces like intentionality, local connection, yada. So if somebody comes in with a broken wrist, we know the local authority aren't going to house them, so we don't do that. If they come with a broken leg, they normally would have a duty to house them. So we start the process, the minute they come in, the minute we see them, and I think we house him, we take a duty, we contact housing.
Okay.
So if somebody comes in, I don't know, they've got first abscess, they need IV antibiotics, they could be in for some period of time.
Yeah.
That could be a slower process, we can look for appropriate accommodation, if they can do stairs.
And is most of that appropriate accommodation a hospital?
No, not at all. Not at all. The pathway into a hostel in Brighton and Hove is very different. It's the only place we will put people when they leave the hospital, unless they're already housed in a hostel, is into temporary emergency accommodation. So unsupported, quite inadequate accommodation in my opinion. And that's why we have these. And this is where our Just Life outreach workers come into their own, because they will support them, welfare check them.
Sorry.
So yeah, I think the debate is really useful. So what's slightly different about what's evolved in Brighton is this partnership with Just Life and this tenancy support into sort of the quite a lot of houses of multiple occupation type setups in Brighton. And it's, I think what's interesting is the way that a slightly different collaborative service is formed around the same sort of Midas pathway. Another question?
Just to add to the lady saying we've got very little in Wales, in the Isle of Man, there's no legislation for homelessness at all, so there's no statutory duty, full stop. So
just when you thought it couldn't get any worse. Because we're going to be hearing from Scotland later how you know they've abolished the statutory duty. There's a duty to everybody. Desperate. Right, so if we're going to have enough time for conversation, we're going to need to get a little bit more succinct and a bit faster. Who am I going to give the microphone to? So we get down fast. Oh, let's talk to Leeds, shall we? Should we go to the Leeds people and hear what's happening?
Been there since 2015, not very long time. Things that go well, see the first services.
Can you hold it nearer to your mouth? Do you want to stand? Do you mind standing up, actually?
Won't make a difference.
No, but you look good. No, just a question over here.
Sorry, I just want to ask about the three beds. Are they from the council, from housing, or are they from somewhere else? And who are they? Are they sort of supported?
They're from St George's Crypt, which is a charity. The vast majority of the beds in that hostel are provided by the council and are only available to people who the council's duty to house. But they have these three beds, which they're using as compassionate beds for people who weren't entitled to any other type of housing. And they allow us to have an issue to move them, and they'll all be able to use them.
Do you know how
they
pay for that?
They won't pay for the entire charity.
Right.
So we be better careful going from the pay for the medical nursing support we're bringing for to.
I don't really expect my experience with Pathways from one. I just wanted to ask all the Pathways Plus people, do you have an active dental interaction with medical abuse, so should we hold that part up on it for many years? There's a teeth, there's a element you don't get medical, and you've got two feet.
Yeah, so a really good question about access to dental services. Do you have any particular access in Leeds? If not, we might get the referral for Dr. Mm-hmm.
We have possibly slightly better access because our community just provides us, happens to also provide a community dental service. So we've got a slight fast track into that sort of service, but they don't do our
in a moment to pass over to Bradford and the Bevan practice. We've got there we go. Because you can also touch on the. I heard in the coffee break you start to think more about access to dental care, so you can work that subtly into your practice.
Can you stand up for us so we can see? Oh, thank you.
My name is Helen Thielen, I'm the lead nurse of the Bradford Fair Pathway team. We've been established in the hospital and work from the hospital days for 2.5 years now. The team's evolved quite a lot since we started. So there were just two full-time staff and then Dr. Rees who finished it. For two sessions a week. We now have four full-time staff, so we have myself as the lead nurse, a case manager, an AE nurse who we very strategically appointed, and a care navigator. We also have a mental health nurse that comes in, a GP that comes in for one session a week, and admin support as well. So with regards to funding, we're just waiting to hear whether we've got funding, because my contract comes out in about 3 weeks. So we've got assurances that it will be running over until the summer, and then there's been talks between the CCGs that it will continue on for at least a five-year contract. So what's going well, I suppose our main thing is the outcomes, both on hospital usage and the patient outcomes, patient feedback questionnaire. For the first 2 years, the costs from early attendances, admissions and bed days, were just over £500,000, and that were from the initial 2 years. And so we continue to monitor, we've got quite a good monitoring process to be able to provide quarterly reports, which is done at a strategic board level. The reputation of the team, I think we've established itself really well. So referrals that they've made practically instantly, like you say, from the A&E, working in A&E as well. The integrated working that we have between primary and secondary care and the private sector as well, the good attendances at the NDTs that we do, you know, that really does give the patients the best outcomes. We have an intermediate care facility called Bricks, which is a step down from the hospital, where kind of the referral process. So anybody that comes into hospital that's got an ongoing medical need can be assessed for Bricks. If they've got nowhere to go, but they're not actually needed to stay in hospital, they can go to Bricks on a short term. We say short term, but it does vary. We say 6 to 8 weeks, and that has on-site medical input, as well as mental health support going in. So a GP comes in from Bedham for a session a week, and we have housing support staff there that work in the longer term, kind of housing with them. I suppose one thing that we wasn't aware of was Atlantic, which we now become quite the experts in, is getting funding under public health for people who have previously been in hospital under a public health section. Or non-compliance with medication, so we've been able to do that. And also, if somebody's got care needs that they've got no recourse to public fund, we've gone through the Human Rights Act and been able to fund them all, got their care needs. We've also established follow-ups. What we found is that we get to a certain point and people would just be discharged and then we'd not hear or see anything, and we presume that these really robust plans that we've put in place would be kind of followed up. And when we started doing the follow-ups in September last year, we found that in quite a few cases that there wasn't. So every patient that's discharged has a follow-up at 2 weeks and then one at 6 weeks. Various things, they've lost the mobile phone, we've got the appointment letters, they didn't turn to housing, so that enables us to sort of re-engage and back in with services. Data collection, the integrated working street medicine team as well, close links with the police. We've now got representative from the police team that comes to us every day, which is invaluable, the information that they provide, because we never get the correct information from patients when. The other thing as well that was key was when we initially started in the hospital, we were based with social services and the discharge team, Barrett, Hamilton, possibly GP and Rosington Brakes.
So the particular things that spring out for me for what's happening in Bradford is they've got these 14 beds, specialist medical respiratory unit, and having the facility there means you can then argue for public health funding for people to stay there or the Human Rights Act, right? But it somehow I think makes it easier that you work facility, you can then fight to get the money to get people into it. The other innovation is this very bravely following people up sort of 2 weeks and 6 weeks after they've been discharged, rather than hoping that no news is good news. So that's really interesting and that's happening. So if you just think about the new ideas about dental oral health.
Hi, my name's Alison Smith, I'm a GP at Ben, but before I was a GP I was actually a dentist a long time ago. So one of the things that's really struck me working in homeless health has been the falling state of dental health amongst population groups that we serve. So we're doing some work at Ben to try and firstly assess the population, see what the need actually is, by getting some really good data. And we're hoping to set that up in the next few weeks. But we're also looking at some partnerships for working with volunteer dentists or the charity called Dentaid, who are very keen to work with that groups of patients. And also hoping to get dental students involved. So it's all working out.
So lots of interesting things happening. So. Absolutely fascinating to hear from everybody. As always, we're completely running out of time. So what we've still got to hear from KHP and UCLH. And while we're hearing from them, if you could be thinking, maybe just we'll just get to one thing that you would like Pathway, the charity, to do to support the teams or develop more teams. We'll see if we can gather up those ideas at the end. So maybe get KHP to tell us briefly about that too.
I'm
going to
get Chanel to stand up in a minute. I'm Sana Khan, I'm the GP clinical lead for the King's Health Partners, Pathway Homeless team at Dyson St Thomas's and also at SLAN, the South London Horsley Mental Health Trust. We have a third team at King's, so I'm also representing them as well because we are one unit, as it were. The team at Dyson St Thomas's at King's started in early 2014 following a needs assessment in 2012. And it's been running for 2 years and now has recurring funding, at least in an email, from CCGs, which is about as good as it gets. The SLAM sort of mental health bit of the team started in February 2015 and is currently on a 3-year funding, which includes a detailed evaluation of the service. And that is going to run for 3 years until 2018, so we'll be starting the commissioning process sometime next year. In terms of the sort of format of the team, it's a very large team and includes a multidisciplinary and interdisciplinary service. And Chanel can help me with the numbers here. So we've got 5 housing workers across the 3 sites. The 3 major charities, housing charities, that's Passage, St Mungo's Broadway and St Giles. We have 2 GPs, total of 11 sessions across the 3 sites, 2 full-time nurses across 2 sites, that's King's, the acute trust of King's and Dyson St Thomas's, 2 mental health practitioners with a background in occupational therapy, and I'll come on to the OT role because that's really important, and they're based at SLAM, so the Mental Health Trust, full-time occupational therapist, also with a mental health background, you can see the trend here, based at Dyson St Thomas's. We have a social worker split across the 2 acute trusts. We have a peer advocate from Groundswell, which is a charity that supports patients to attend outpatient and community clinics. Is that everybody?
Administrator.
And we have a full-time administrator across 3 sites. We also have an integration lead, who's Jane Cook, and she sits basically across the 3 teams. And Jane's role is to coordinate and ensure standards across the sites. She's also working sort of outreach into the community services, so that's projects like the housing workers, the roles of the housing workers, the liaison with the charities, with local authorities, with making sure that we've got integrated computer systems and that that all works. So she has an important role really making sure that across the boroughs and across the teams, everything is kind of functioning optimally working. In terms of the things we're really proud of, I think that sort of integrated service across the three sites really enables us to have a foothold across the whole of South London and actually quite a lot of Westminster as well, because as you know, St Thomas's sits right on about 200 metres from the Westminster border, so we have a lot of Westminster patients. The multidisciplinary nature of the team deals with the clinical, the housing, the functional, so that's the OT role, which really focuses on kind of function, routine, the sort of what you would expect an OT to do around function and assessing people's function and ability, but also how they're going to then go on and manage, and that's particularly important with patients who are functionally impaired, but also hostel patients and frequent attenders, where often thinking about their daily routines, why they're attending hospital, what's bringing them here, really I think it's been a very powerful role within frequent attendance to hospital. The close relationships with accident emergency departments, the close relationships across not just primary and secondary care, we've built up very close networks with all of our homeless GP practices and homeless friendly, i.e. those that have mainstream practice plus homeless practices, plus homeless patients around the three boroughs. In particular, the very close network with the community homeless nursing team, so that's the health inclusion team, and the homeless health team in Westminster. The health inclusion team is based in Lambeth, Southwark and Lewisham. And that really means that we can facilitate onward care and planning of care back into the community. And then the frequent attenders work, we have a quarterly frequent attenders meeting where all the community services come from the hostels, from St Martin's in the Field, from the day centres, and again that enables us to build care plans that allow patients to then have every contact counting, which is a sort of national strategy. So when you come to hospital, it's not just, oh, you're here, it's what are the outstanding health needs, what are the outstanding social care needs, what are the outstanding housing needs, and what can we do about it? And one more thing is that the trusts, I think, have really embraced the idea and believe that it's really important. Anything else, Chanel?
That was good.
Thank you very much. So, massive team across five hospitals, a whole academic health science network, and the particular distinctive feature about this is that these are all directly hospital employed people. So the CCG is paying for it, it's all done in the hospitals, and this is mainly because of the size of the area and there not being one sort of community unit or practice that would be identified, although very closely to the health inclusion team. Okay, so UCLHR friends, I've got the short straw, 2 minutes to briefly, and then we'll just get some feedback from you.
I'm Tim, the GP from the team. We have the privilege of having been the longest established team. How many years is it now? Eight? When did you start? 2007. Seven.
Nine, you started. Yeah, 2009
it started. UCH is a comparatively compact unit, which helps us. I'm not going to really. What do we have? We have 2 days of GP, we have two full time nurses, we have between, I don't know, one and three care navigators, and we have a care navigator manager, part-time, Trudy, who started off. So we have some of the history that goes back to how it all started with Hayden and Trudy and Nigel. I could tell you loads of things you've already heard, so I'll just quickly go through achievements. We're very well established in the hospital, so we're well known, and we get a lot of referrals straight through. We've exported our care navigators, as you heard, to the Royal London, and that's a real achievement, I think, for Trudy. And you'd back that up, wouldn't you?
He's got a new local connection there.
Got a new local connection. We've had, one of the things that was picked out by the team was better success in going to housing when we actually accompany patients to housing. We've had quite a lot of good outcomes. I think really sort of forced their hand, really, sort of saying, no, come on, really is vulnerable. There really are the issues here. But we have to work hard at it, as you know, getting all the data together. We would love to have 14 beds in the bricks. And our great project really has been in the last few years, isn't it? Trying to get to respite care. So we've formed really good relationships with St Mungo's team, Hospital Discharge Network beds, but we're also very glad to have Lalo, which is a little hostel right on our doorstep by Euston Station, and two of their staff are here today. And we're very pleased because it's been an excellent working relationship. We've done a pilot for a year. It took a long time to get going. We have got funding, it looks like, for the part of it that works with UCLH at home network, i.e. they send nurses in as a virtual admission. We now need to get it for B&B problems. The problems will still be the same. Medically fit for discharge. It just means, you know, they don't need to be in the bed anymore. TTOs, yes. Borough boundaries, we had great fun with borough boundaries in London. Increasing age, we had 88, 85 last week, and we put this poor man in a ladder and it was a disaster. But not from their point of view, but, you know, it wasn't appropriate, so we had to learn from these things. People not engaging. I mean, I felt that talk this morning was just so spot on for us all, really. Disclosing, all of that sort of stuff. Benefits taking ages, no recourse to public funds. Challenges, we would like better data. So we haven't got EMIS yet, we would love to have it. We'd love to have better access to the spine. We'd love our, we've had head injury and cognitive assessment coming out that we'd love to develop, but we haven't got there yet.
Well done.
Thank you very much, Tim. That's very succinct. So one of the interesting things is one little breakthrough is we think we've got the hospital to pay the total costs of a bed in a hospital to facilitate hospital discharge. So that we're actually making the NHS pay for some short-term housing costs, which is unusual. The UCLH team, although it's the longest lasting one, is still on a six-month rolling renewable funding thing. So it's not permanently funded. It's contingent on the CCG's funding for shifting patients away from hospital, and that's only renewed on a 6 monthly basis. So thank you very much to everybody. That's been really interesting, really fascinating for me to get an overview. Could I just ask for people to in the remaining minute and a half to why you've been thinking about this? Is there anything that you would like Pathway, the charity, to be doing which would support you?
Are you just an English
charity? Anybody's perspective, yeah, absolutely.
Are you just an English charity?
No, we're an international charity now. We've got one in Perth, Australia. So we'd love to come to Wales.
Yeah, okay, great. That's fine. We'd
like to help you to do a needs assessment to justify the need for it. So one aspiration is a sort of four nations thing. We've got England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland.
Well, as a commissioner, I'd really appreciate some day around our comments. It's very difficult for us to make decisions long term if we can't demonstrate that, so we can do it collectively.
Thank you very much. Yeah, so we're working with Sam Dorney Smith on a paper which is collating outcomes across the system. So mainly in the KHP team, we're hoping to bring in some outcome work from the Bradford team and other places. One of the challenges is that we're all gathering different outcomes data according to what our local commissions are asking for. We're about to publish a paper in the Royal College of Journal of Law Physicians showing this conference is a great opportunity, so go and talk to Bradford, we'll hear about their van, and you'll be hearing about the street average in Perth, Australia, but we'll go down the front here, and then I think we'll be winding up.
I think, again, back to the Care Navigator thing, and I think Care Navigator, as pathways sort of view it. I think people from a that have had experience of homelessness themselves, I think, is an amazing thing, and I would very strongly like to see that continuing. I suppose one thing to think about collectively, though, is how that could be funded so it's sustainable, because so far I don't think, well, certainly the ones you train up come out of charity money, don't they, and paid out of charity money, and I haven't been in the commission part of things, although I would think in some ways that if we thought about it, probably is very sellable because it ticks a lot of boxes in the NHS from a very pragmatic sort of point of view.
Yeah, Get Our Care Navigators commissioned and employed by the NHS, that's absolutely right. That is what I really want to do. Brilliant. So I think we're on 1 o'clock now, aren't we? Yeah, we are. We're just over, so it's time for lunch. So yes, thank you for reminding me. So thank you very much, everybody, for contributing and for listening. We want to try and get a collective photo of the Pathway teams just before lunch. So what I was hoping that the people who are specifically in Pathway teams is when we go out, if you can gather as many of your colleagues as possible.
The way it works with the ladder is that they need to move on away.
So can you just...
Nice and warm.
Yeah.
Can't you do it along the wall?
Yeah. Well, they're not. Well, that's a hospital fund. It's other funding part of it. The only other risk with that is unless it's thought through, is if it's just several attempts. Yes, I think it is. Sorry about that. I was on Friday, maybe about the 29th. It's always a Wednesday, so I don't know where I got that from. But we don't do many things as we can once, as you see.
Oh, I think you've got to go anyway.
Yes, it is. So probably the best thing to do would be
okay.
Arrive sort of 10 to